Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today is Melvin Gregg. And Melvin, I must say, you have the most unusual resume of anybody we have interviewed.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, you can do.
And I say that as a compliment, not as a joke.
I take it as a compliment. I definitely take it as a compliment.
Well, it's incredible. So we saw you recently, not in person, but Tim Story brought The Blackening to my dad's class at USC. And watch that movie needs to be seen in a theater with people because the reactions are priceless. Yeah. And there's also a lot of jokes in it that I got to tell Tim later were like the Aunt Viv jokes and stuff like that. The Fresh Prince jokes just did me in. But you know, seeing you on a big screen there. So that's why when you were brought up, I went, oh, you know, we just did that. We just saw you there. And that movie, I have to say, did I ever think I'd be watching it with my father? No, was not the first thing came to my mind. But
I love that.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's funny and it lets everything be funny. You know, it doesn't try to take itself seriously somehow. You know, there are potent moments, but it's mostly fun. And having fun is a really nice thing right now.
It is different going to the theater and going to the premieres. I probably saw it like at least seven times. And I sat through every time just because it was an experience. I had seen the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I seen, but to see the reactions. And it was so interesting with different audiences in different parts of the world.
Of course.
Different parts of the United States.
Yeah.
They would laugh at different things. And it was just different energies depending on what room it was in. And it was just fun. It was a ride. Like some audiences were more, I don't want to say pretentious, but just kind of more.
Of course.
Uptight. And then when
stuck
it gets
up,
to. When it really starts rolling after the lights get out and the game comes out. And you just see them kind of let loose and, you know, 20 minutes afterwards, everyone's just relaxed, laughing. And that's an experience that I haven't had in the theater prior to this. So I was excited to be a part of it.
Well, this is the thing. Because
we should explain for those who don't know, The Blackening is a parody of Friday the 13th type movies. Bunch of young friends going away for a weekend in the cabin in the woods.
Yeah, and Tim Story, who's a legend, really. I mean, he's worked for so long and he's done so much. We got to interview him for this show, and it was so much fun. Again, fun because this is his passion, and he's the kind of person where when you meet him and you speak to him, you just think, okay, I want to be on your set.
And it's so relaxed. That's one thing I've noticed. I've been lucky to work with a lot of great directors, and the most tenured, awarded, critically acclaimed directors are all just really relaxed. Like, nothing really bothers them. And he was one of those guys.
Well, I think it's a bit of that is that there's nothing to prove. And I feel like people who are confident in themselves and in what they do don't have to tell you how good and important they are.
Right.
You know? And that, so who have been your favorites to work with?
Tim is definitely up there. I've only really had good experiences with directors. One of the first directors I worked with was Steven Soderbergh. So, that was great. It was a movie shot entirely on an iPhone. So that was very interesting. I worked with Gavin O'Connor, which is a great director. I worked with Ben Affleck.
We like that movie so much as well. The Way Back is such a...
Yeah, I worked with him on that, but we also, we did a campaign, Wynn Casino Bet campaign, and he directed that, so I was able to be directed by him as well.
Wow.
So that was very cool. Lee Daniels is another one, John Singleton, Rick Famuyiwa. So yeah, I've
You've cut a wide swath.
Yeah, in a fairly short time.
Yeah. What blows my mind, honestly, is I watched, you did a great interview with Bill Bellamy, and I love Bill Bellamy. And part of what's so interesting, of course, is obviously you have huge followings on multiple platforms. And when you were talking about how hard that is and how much work that is, I don't think people really understand to build up the millions of people who watch you and watch you regularly and interact, because you were on Vine, which launched a lot of people, you know, because the thing about it was you had to be smart and quick. So you are.
What was the timing on that?
For Vine?
Yeah.
It was technically 7 seconds, but when you break it down, you really only had 6.4 seconds.
6.4 seconds to make an impression.
Yeah.
Right.
And that, so how did you find that? How did you start that?
So I moved to LA to act, and I was just doing, you know, your typical acting grind, doing student films, extra work, just low budget films, whatever I could, commercials to get in front of the camera. And I found it hard to get the opportunities that I felt like I needed to get to where I wanted to be as an actor. And I couldn't get the representation to get me in the rooms to get the real auditions because I didn't have the real credit. So it was kind of like a catch 22. I can get commercial representation because you could do that yourself. You know, LA casting, Actors Access, you know, get yourself to those smaller projects, but the higher tier projects you don't have access to. So I was trying to figure out, like, how can I gain access to these people, to these rooms? And I was just looking at people that I saw working, and I would see like rappers working or like Disney stars or people that just had some type of celebrity. So I figured if I could garner some type of audience, I could then get the attention of somebody who put me in the right places. And on social media, I had never done comedy before. I grew up fairly shy, kind of introverted in a sense. I stayed to myself, but I'm a thinker. I could reverse engineer things and figure out how things work. So when I saw Vine, what was very interesting about it to me was there was no gatekeeper.
Yeah.
It was solely up to me, and it was an even playing field because at the time you couldn't edit. You couldn't edit any videos. You couldn't use any software. You had to shoot stuff directly. Like, you shoot it, you have to shoot this clip, then that clip, then that clip. There's no rearranging, no nothing.
Yeah.
So it was just based on creativity. That was the only thing that differentiate or separate one person from the next. Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm not limited. It's just up to me. So I just have to put in the work. I went to school for marketing before I moved to LA. So I kind of understood I needed to market myself in a way that kind of stood out. And I was like, okay, let me figure out what works. So I looked at the videos that were most successful, and I kind of reverse engineered it. And from that, I kind of taught myself comedy, just the format of comedy. So I was like, okay, cool. Now I can implement what I know here. Just try to find variations, do the same thing, but different. And I storyboarded. I realized I needed to storyboard because you only have 6.4 seconds and you have to shoot it in order. And if the shot is 1.2 seconds, you have to shoot it 1.2 seconds, you know, because there's no edit. So I learned that if I storyboarded, I could be more efficient. So I storyboarded a lot of ideas. I started shooting ideas, and I kind of was like, okay, let me just shoot enough content. Whereas if I shoot the one that I think will be popular, I will have audience retention because when they go to my page, they'll see other content. So they might stick around and might watch these videos and these videos.
Right.
So I just approached it from that direction and just found new ways to diversify my audience and continue to, you know, build my audience. And after a while, I found a good group of people who every day we just created and we motivated each other and we just kind of helped one another. And it just became a bubble where we would just compete with one another. And then we look up and, you know, we're the biggest guys in the world with millions of followers and billions of views. And at that point, it's like, I did what I set out to do, and let's, you know, move forward with the initial plan.
But that's you are extremely intelligent, and that comes across in the interviews you do and just in the thought that you put into everything. And as I mean, I say,
you could be doing motivational speeches right now. Because a lot of guys who are scuffling or scrambling, guys and girls who are, I say guys generically.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are scuffling and scrambling don't have the
wherewithal to do all of the things you just talked about.
To think through, as you did, a game plan. You had a game plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many people online right now. And that's the other thing is that, you know, there's so much out there. Again, how do you find where you're good and where you can reach people and where they enjoy finding you every day, where every day that video pops up and they're excited to see you? You know, as it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. As an actor, I get to sit back, somebody write my lines, they tell me what to wear.
Right.
The set. After my dad's rap, I don't have to worry about the footage. I don't have to worry about pickups, editing, scoring, distribution, none of that. But as a content creator online, you have to, you know, it comes from being a brainchild to, okay, how do I get this made? Let me find somebody to shoot it. Let me find somebody, if you can't edit, let me find somebody who can edit. Or like myself, I don't like being dependent. So I taught myself how to edit. I taught myself how to, you know, score. And then you look at the analytics and you figure out what's the best time to post, how to reach this audience, how to reach that audience. If I want to put out ads, what's going to make sense when I'm not really losing the money? And then understanding the revenue when that comes through. And then when the brand endorsements come through to get paid, okay, now I have to learn how to negotiate these different brands and how to, you know, limit the deliverables and just kind of understand some of this language, unless you want to find a lawyer where you know, you will pay out 10 or 20.
Then you have to pay your lawyer, yeah.
You know, they take advantage of influencers because we aren't unionized. So it's like, okay, we want 20%. So it's a lot to being an influencer. My respect goes out to anybody who's doing it. And you have to be consistent in a way that will drive you crazy. You take 3 days off, they say you disappeared off the face of the earth, and now you have to start all over to get the momentum again. So it's a lot of work.
It's a lot. And, you know, I don't like the word content only because I feel like it's more than that. It is entertainment, it's film, it's whatever. But watching, as I say, watching what everybody does and knowing that drive and that consistency, it just blows my mind because I think, I mean, even now, so you have two kids. I have one. I am barely able to post anything on our social media because I am chasing that small human around all day. And how people are able to do both, I don't know. I really don't know.
I was talking to my fiance about that. At this point, I'm a dinosaur on social media. Like, I meet people who tell me they grew up on my stuff, which is insane because, like, wasn't that long ago, but
no.
Yeah, they was watching me in 2015, you know, 8 years later, you know, you go from
it's something
14 to 22, so you really can, you know, grow up on the content. But yeah, it's no longer a priority of mine, so I can't put attention towards it because it's not a thing you can halfway do and be successful. You have to commit totally to it. And at the time I was really doing it, I was single, I didn't have kids. It was just, you know, I could stay and, you know, in my office until 3-4 a.m. working. But, you know, with kids, you can't do that. So, yeah, I don't have the bandwidth to do it any longer. But my respect goes out to everyone who does.
Yeah. You're also, this is what, when we say that you do everything, you build, you are a carpenter, you draw out plans, watching you create Jurassic Park in your backyard. Pretty impressive.
Thank you.
But I mean, it's just, so are you the sort of person who, when someone says, hey, can you blank, you go, yeah.
Not really. I'm the type of person that's good at everything. I've always been kind of mediocre at a lot of things. The first thing that I found that I felt like I could actually have the potential to be really good at was acting. And then I fell in love through social media, just overall creating, because I always felt like I was witty. And that's just another form of creativity. And I've always been creative. If it's something I could figure out, I'll be able to figure it out. Physically, I'm not the most athletic. I'm athletic enough. I'm not like the fastest and strongest. I'm always in the middle with a lot of things. Musically, I can't do anything. But I'm willing to put in the work, things out. And I'm willing to learn it. And this generation that we're in, this day that we're in, we have so much information online.
Yeah.
And I do, I can go on YouTube and learn how to do it. Most of the stuff that you may see me do, you know, in my backyard, I go on YouTube. I figure out how to do it there and then just kind of apply it.
Oh, as they say, 50% of anything is showing up.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That quote was so instrumental to me being here now. When I was in Virginia, I wanted to act. I had a cousin who knew an actress, and she was kind enough to talk to me on the phone. And she said, half of the battle was showing up. Half the battle was getting to LA. And at that point, I was like, okay, my focus is to get to LA. So,
yeah.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Where did you grow up?
Virginia.
Okay. See, this again, I say this to so many of my actor friends who move here. I really try to remind them how brave they are for doing it and that they should be really proud of themselves for doing it. Because moving anywhere for any reason, you know, is difficult. Moving from where you have your life and your family and your friends and all of that stuff, that's difficult no matter what. But moving to, whether you're someone who goes to New York or Chicago or LA to try and get into is film or theater, that's a lot. And you're going somewhere and suddenly, you know, like I love driving friends to auditions where you walk into a room and it's all 5'7" brunette, looks like this, looks like that. And you're like, oh my God, there's 40 of you. You know, it's a lot. And then getting into auditioning is a lot. And yeah, not taking things personally is a lot. You know, understanding that sometimes it's just not right and that's okay. You're not right for it, fine. But all of it, the mental fortitude that it takes, blows my mind.
I think that's really where the 10,000 hours come in. It's not necessarily owning your craft, but developing that thick skin, or just kind of getting to a point where you just don't care anymore, where the anxiety kind of releases itself and the nerves relax. It takes a lot. I would say when I moved to LA, the first maybe 8-9 years, whenever I would go into an audition room, I never knew what was going to happen because my nerves could attack at any moment and I like freeze up or start staggering or not breathing. And it's like I did all this work and prep, and then when it was showtime, I clammed up. And it's just kind of a part of it where you just have to grow through it.
Yeah. It's, as I say, I just...
Well, everybody knows.
Yeah.
Everybody's been through that experience. Anyone on that side of the camera.
Yeah.
And it's a shared experience. So at least, you know, you can commiserate with other people who endured that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, like you mentioned Ben Affleck, being an actor, I think, has to make him a better director.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
or you hope, yeah.
Because, you know, he's been there. He knows, you know, he knows what's going on and how difficult.
Yeah.
And how challenging it is to expose yourself, you know, and to be, you know, virtually naked, not literally naked, in front of other people, in front of a camera.
100%. I feel like a lot of the best directors do. They have that understanding, and I've known directors to, you know, go and take acting classes just so they can
gain
that. when it comes to understanding the acting.
Well, that's a, when you're talking about learning to storyboard for yourself and do all of that, having all those skills, though it is lovely to not have to use them, you know, so you can just be focused on one. It is, you know, it's an incredible gift to have them in your back pocket and understand more of what's going on when you're looking at the editor getting what he's doing, you're looking at lighting and you're getting what they're doing, you know?
I'm so fortunate to my time doing social media where I had to wear all of these different hats, because I feel like it's definitely is beneficial to me as an actor, whereas I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of myself editing. Right. I know what I look like when I do different things. I've learned things that I don't like to do. I've learned to lean into things that I do like, and then just directing myself as well, being able to take direction, understanding blocking and lighting, like it was an indie, and you know, I know how to log into the receiver on the camera so I can see the playback in between takes. So, you know, as an indie, so we don't have time to look at playback, but I'm in the cut as they're reviewing, looking at it on my phone. I'm like, okay, I need to, you know, take a couple steps here. I'm stacking here. I need to back up so the person can see me there. You know what I mean? Just being able to understand framing, knowing what a camera is. These are things that actors learn, you know, over time. But as you said earlier, I've only been consistently working as an actor for like 5 years.
Right.
And I've developed a little fast, I think, because of the time I spent doing social media.
Yeah. You were a part of one of the COVID phenomenons where something comes out and because we were all home, everybody in the entire world was watching it. And with Nine Perfect Strangers, you have such a, it's a knockout cast. It's a real knockout cast. What was it like doing that?
It was fun. It was an immersive experience because we went to Australia.
Mm.
I just had a kid. My son was born like in May and we left June. I
think So
my fiance and my kid went, and it was great because the world was shut down here. Everyone had masks on. But when we went to Australia, they didn't really have COVID. So my kids didn't see faces and to develop, and just also us to kind of get out of that space. And the cast, we really became close because we didn't know anybody else in Australia. Like
right
into the market, we'll see Michael Shannon riding on a bike, you know, now with his hair blowing in the wind. We get to the restaurant and, you know, Melissa McCarthy sitting in the back, or we might see Luke Evans, you know, walking down the street, and it just kind of felt surreal in a way. But outside of that, as an actor, it was great to just kind of sit back and watch everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone has different, you know, techniques and styles and things that work for them. So just to be able to see all of it was very, 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 I guess, informational. Michael was a guy I could really ask like as many questions as I wanted, and he was more than willing to explain it to me. He gave me so many gems. She was like, I don't know, just like an angel. She was the first person to ever watch my kid, you know what I mean? So it just
really,
we didn't have babysitters, and like,
yeah, no, of course, it's just I just love it.
Yeah, they would come over and, you know, watch the kids so we can go into town and, you know, do something. And it was just a great experience.
What an adventure. What an adventure to have and to do that with your partner, but also to have your son in a place like that. And as you say, especially when the world was upside down.
At 1 month old.
Yeah,
it was a blessing. 1 month old, because, you know, this is a big show. This is Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
So, flying on private jets. And it's like my first time on a private, actually is not. And not to say it as a flex, Ben Affleck took me on my first private jet. But this is my second time and my son is here 1 month, you know, flying on a private jet. And it's, you know, it was kind of a moment where I felt proud. Which is
you should.
So like, I need to go further, but be able to do that for him and, you know, my family, it was cool.
You can tick that box now.
Not that I'm bitter, but my parents have been on a private jet. Guess who hasn't been on a private jet yet?
And it's been a while.
Yeah, well.
In fairness.
But I'm not angry about it, Melvin. I'm not angry at all. Not in the least bit.
Economically, it's not smart.
No, nothing about it is smart. But when you get to say that you went on a private jet with Ben Affleck, that's a pretty solid, like, as little stories go. Yeah, you know, me and Ben Affleck on our PJ as the young.
I guess it's a testament to how great of a guy he is.
Yeah.
He did this for our cast, you know, because on the way back, it was five main guys. And then there was the guys who we didn't see, who didn't really have lines, who were there with us every day. Playing the guys on the bench and to fill out our team. Ben took it upon himself. It wasn't a production thing. He took it upon himself to get a jet and bring all of the guys to Vegas, set up something sweet. So it was the greatest time because he understood that for some guys, it might be the only opportunity that they'll ever have. You know, and then for other guys, you know, it might be motivation to show that, okay, this is possible if I work hard. And that was a great time, man. Like, nothing but the greatest things to say about him.
That's incredible. It's such a, isn't it? It feels so good when people do things like that and you think, oh, so you're not just talented, but you're also like a nice human being.
Yeah. And,
you know,
it leaves such a mark on somebody like myself, because when I look to successful actors, I'm not looking at how they do this. I don't look at the work stuff. I look at the things outside of work because I feel like that's where a lot of actors fail, like off camera. You know what I mean? That's where their lives either deteriorate or they find freedom and happiness. So I kind of always look to how they live off camera. And he's just like an all around, very giving person. Mm.
Is there someone who you would consider a role model? Somebody who, the way they've lived their life and the way they've managed their career impresses you?
I wouldn't say there's one person in particular. And if it is, I just can't think of them. My recollective memory is so bad. But I try to take the good from everyone that I see.
Mm-hmm.
I admire how this person does that. Okay, I try to download that. If I see a pitfall that this person is, you know, it's become bad for them, I'll avoid that. So I just try to take the best parts of people. I can't think of one person where I'm like, okay, this person did it exactly how I want to do it, because, I mean, I don't know. We all have different strong suits and shortcomings.
Yeah.
Now, all our lives are unique. I just personally for myself, I want to work. I want to be exposed to the best material. And like Ben Affleck, I want to write, direct, and act. That's like my goal with this. But what's most important to me, it sounds so cliche, but if you know me, you know, like, I really mean it. But it's like my family.
Mm.
Like my happy place.
Well, because if things are good with your family, then everything else is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reality. It's, you know, right now, with so much going on in the world, so much going on, most of it terrifying. If you can look, and I'm sure you have a similar experience to me, but looking at our little kids and just going, okay, that's it. I just have to block everything else out for a minute and look at my kid and hug them and say, okay, if they're okay, everything's okay. You know, if you and your partner are communicating and things are good, and obviously she supports you, that's amazing. That's amazing. You take care of each other. That's amazing. You have two kids and they're happy and they're healthy. What more do you need? You know,
I can agree with you more. Even in this, you know, this last time, the strike has been going on, and, you know, luckily we're out of it. For me, it wasn't as bad because I've been spending my last year writing, so I had more time to focus on that.
Sure.
But, like you just said, it's all about perspective. I had an episode last week where we had to take my son to the hospital.
And
when I'm sitting there, like him being in the hospital because I couldn't go in with him because I had my other son with me in the car.
Right.
It just put things in perspective. And he's okay. He's 100% fine.
Good.
But at the moment, I wasn't sure. I didn't know what was going on. You know, all poison controlling and nothing else mattered. My career didn't matter. My resume didn't matter. The money, the bills I have, none of that matter. It was just like, this is the most important thing in the world right now. And I kind of take those things as omens to just realign my focus and priorities and just try to carry it with me throughout everything. And I'm just saying that to piggyback off of what you said, that family is the most important.
It's true. It's what you work for. And that's where the fun comes in, yeah. is when you can celebrate together, having someone to celebrate with.
Seeing you guys do this, it's like, it's heartwarming. Like, when I'm able to be an age and have my son like me enough to want to do it, we could spend that time together with something that we both love, that I'm sure you introduce her to this world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And we don't take it for granted. We don't take it lightly.
No.
We really value that we can do this together.
No.
It's very important and admirable.
And when your kids get to go to set and start to understand the fun of that, and when your kids get to find craft services and understand the fun of that one.
At this point, they don't care. Like, they just see people. I'm just one of the people. It's just like, no, turn it. I don't want to see that. And it's like, okay, cool.
That's it. Thank you so much, child of mine, as you could not care less about what I am doing.
It's humble. Oh, man.
What are you looking forward to next? What are you excited to do next?
So, like I said, I've been since social media, you know, I've always wanted to be able to create on a bigger scale in a more traditional space.
Sure.
And, you know, I kind of dabbled at writing for so long. I learned how to write, you know, a minute and 7 second stuff and up to 10 minutes. But I'm like, if I really want to do what I want to do in a space I want to be in, I have to learn more. And I was intimidated by it for a while. And I would start writing a script and leave it alone and just not commit my time to it. But this past year, like, I got a nanny, well, my mother-in-law, to come in and watch the kid. So I would have 5 hours every day to commit to writing, and the strike just kind of gave me that time too, undivided. And I've learned so much. I've read so many books. I've did so many drafts on scripts. I have a few features finished. I have a pilot finished. I'm working on a third feature with, you know, 4 more beat out. So I'm really excited about writing. I just got a new team with a lit department that's very excited about me writing as well. And they're very supportive. I'm taking meetings with producers. So just my journey as a writer is really exciting to me at this point.
That is exciting. As again, you know, you look at all of it and you handle it with grace and you go, okay, now I'm going to try this and I want to be the best at that. And that's why you're successful.
And having a property that you've created, that's power.
Yeah.
That's power. And I have so many in my class that I teach at USC. We have filmmakers come every week, and they can't emphasize enough that that's where it all stems from.
Mm.
If you're not creative as you are, if you've optioned a book, or if you've optioned the rights to a play, or a graphic novel, or created something on your own, and you own it, and it's good, and the word gets out that it's good, that's the power.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that's another nugget, like I pulled from social media, because whatever I made, I owned. I was
the owner.
So even after I created a video and it went viral, when other monetization opportunities came about, and I was able to, you know, now post 3-year-old content onto Facebook and garner, you know, ad revenue on YouTube, it was like, okay, ownership is very important. And creative control is important too if you really want your voice to be out, because you know what I mean? If there's so many creative voices onto something, it's not as fulfilling if it does great. And if it doesn't do good, you just point fingers. And it's like, I don't know, writing kind of gives me, I understand there's a lot I'm going to have to learn once I get a script sold, and then producers come in and then directors come in, and it's going to be a tussle, because I know writing. They tell me that, but at this point, I have the creative control over what I'm creating. And like you said, having ownership of that is how you create a sustainable life, because acting compensation is going, it's fickle in a way.
You know? Yeah, fickle is definitely, but yeah, I mean, that's two of my dad's favorite directors are Jeff Nichols and Alexander Payne. They write and they direct, and it is their baby. And getting to do that kind of thing is so special. and difficult as well, because bringing anything to life can be difficult. And the a saying I always enjoy that you like to use is failure is an orphan, but success has many fathers. You know, everybody wants to be there when it's doing well. And then if it's not doing well, no one knows where it came from. You know, it appeared out of nowhere. I don't know how that happened. Exactly. So I didn't, it wasn't me. Exactly. No, it's, again, you're working hard, and it's exciting. I'll tell you, it's exciting for us because that's our favorite thing, is seeing good movies, good TV shows. And if you care the way that you care, means you're going to bring us something good.
Yeah.
So there. But it's lovely to speak to you, Melvin, and congratulations on everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys, and it was a pleasure to meet you too.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
When Stacey Cusack, who's a publicist that I work with, came to me and said that she really thought Melvin would be good for our show, you know, I love the publicists that we work with, and I take their recommendations very seriously. And he is absolutely so interesting. And, you know, it's...
A self-made man.
Very much so. I mean, in every possible way.
Right.
And what he's talking about, saying, you know, starting at 14 years old and being in your 20s and having people, they've watched you on these various platforms. You know, I know for some people, they may not see what it takes to be successful in social media, but it really is, it's a lot. And that, again, you're also suddenly expected to be a business person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're your own agent to a degree. Again, these things, I mean, I know from all the years of looking at your contracts, and my mom is the one who usually reads over everything and will go through and make notes and say, no, one of our favorite terms, in perpetuity. In perpetuity. I'd like to own you in perpetuity. And my mother goes in with a big old X and says, not today, Satan.
In all known media.
Yeah.
And
in the universe.
And others yet to be devised.
That's right. On planets we have not yet landed on. But, you know, that's the thing to me, is that you have, and they're generally young people who suddenly have to understand how to do all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, to be successful at it takes time and takes effort. And inevitably, at some point, someone screws you over, because that's how that works. But yeah, I'm really happy that we got to speak to him. And
yes.
I am excited about what he's going to do next.
And he's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, 100%. He's somebody that I know that we'll keep seeing. On a private jet with Ben Affleck to Vegas. Not too shabby. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. We appreciate you being here. I am at Jesse Malton. You are at Leonard Malton on Instagram and Twitter. You're also on Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, Malton on Movies, where we do our live streams. And there's leonardmalton.com. Movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff.
All of that is true and accurate.
Both of them. Yeah. And lastly, of course, the Maltreon Patreon, where you can support what we do. We are so grateful. So, so grateful.
We're so appreciative of everybody, whether you can spare $3 or $5 or more. It really makes a difference.
It helps support what we do. So thank you so much. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual, because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable, it's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.